Blog Talk Radio.
You can't do that. What are you thinking? You are not good enough. You are not going to get that job. You don't have an education. What? That is for smart people, not you. That outfit doesn't look good on you. You look ridiculous. You want to go where? With what? Money you don't have? Remember, you're broke and worthless. Nobody loves you. This is the voice of the toxic ego, the voice that is holding you back from your divine life. Dr. Nydia is here to guide you in learning to let go of this voice. She is here to teach you inner work, a journey through the soul, to empower you in creating a passageway to spiritual development. Dr. Nydia received her PhD from Union Institute and University in Psychology with emphasis in addiction studies. She is a registered clinical social worker intern and received her master's degree from Barry University. She is a certified addiction professional for the state of Florida. She is also a Reiki master, healing touch practitioner, and a master hypnotherapist. For more information, visit her website at www.dranidia.com, Dr. Nydia. Now, please welcome your host of Inner Work, Dr. Nydia.
Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. This is Dr. Nydia.
And this is Alma, and here is Betty.
For a minute there, I got another present. And so, how are you?
I'm okay. Working?
Just okay? That's it?
No, good. I mean, nothing extraordinary happened.
Wait, did you get up this morning?
Yes.
Did you open your eyes and see the day?
Yes,
that's extraordinary.
And it's beautiful.
And it's beautiful. See, we don't realize things we take for granted are, you know, okay, so I got up this morning. Well, you know what? A lot of people didn't.
Yes.
See? And so to me, every day is extraordinary. Every day is wonderful and great. I am just so excited to wake up in the morning and say, oh, crap, another day. I don't know if I'm going to make it to the end of the day, but I've made it so far. See, the thing is that the toxic evil does not appreciate the little things. And they're little things, little nonsense things that we say, oh, that's no good, or that's not important. But everything is important. We don't realize that life is precious and we're here 1 minute and not the next.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, a plane can come into this building. What floor are we on? 16th floor?
Yes.
And how many floors does this building have?
15.
50-something? 56. Yes. Almost 16 floors. Mm-hmm. Plane can easily, I mean, we're real close to the airport,
mm-hmm.
right? And a plane can easily fall on this building and turn us all to crap.
Yes.
And so it's important to recognize the fact that you can breathe, that you can get up out of a bed every morning and walk around and go to the bathroom and you know, take care of your own physiological needs. You know, there are people that can't even wipe their own butt.
Yes.
Somebody else has to do it for them. The good thing is that somebody's got a job. And the bad thing is that somebody has to need somebody to wipe their butt.
Yes.
See?
You know, my talking about that, I was thinking a few times ago, my mother fractured one of her legs.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to take care of her because she couldn't walk. But the thing is, she's so fat,
mm-hmm.
so big,
mm-hmm.
and we couldn't move her, you know, to the other side to help her.
Right.
And I talked to her and I told her, do you realize that if you, when you get older with this weight,
uh-huh.
we cannot help you. We need to hire a person that or two people or more. You know, it's a chain of inconveniences.
Well, it's difficulty for everybody. It's, you know, that the solution is, see, as a Hispanic, we take care of our own people.
Mm-hmm.
See, we don't put them in nursing homes. But sometimes I can understand why we would put somebody in a nursing home, because you're not qualified to do it. Physically or emotionally, we're not qualified to do it. So we take care of our own, but I'm also seeing how the caretaker can get very frustrated and then be cruel to the person that most needs the help.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times, because I remember one of my family members, her mother she didn't have dementia or Alzheimer's or anything like that, but she did get very, very slow, and she had to wear a pamper. She couldn't, you know, control her physiological needs and whatnot. And this family member of mine got very frustrated and would yell at her, at the old lady, and, you know, tell her, oh, you did it again, and I have to clean you up, and I'm so busy, and I don't have time for this, and, you know, and in your old age, you don't want to hear that.
Of course.
You know, that's cruel. That's just like telling a baby you're pooping on yourself and hitting the baby or yelling at the baby because they pooped themselves. They can't help that. And so a lot of times we're not qualified. Not that we're cruel or mean or anything, but we're not qualified to deal with individuals that really need, you know, we need to be there to be nice to them and to love them and have professionals come in or put them in a place where professionals can take care of them, even if we spend a lot of time with them.
Mm-hmm.
See? But we don't do it because, no, this is my mother and I'm going to take care of her even if it kills me. And it may kill you before. I know a lot of people, caretakers, that have died before the person that they're taking care of.
Yes.
Because they're not taking care of themselves. That's what codependency is. See?
Yes.
So I see it every day how the toxic ego is wreaking havoc on our lives, on our health. I'm going through a situation at work. I mentioned it last week in the Spanish program that I thought I was going to get fired, and I still don't know if I'm going to get fired. But primarily, I have to laugh because it's a situation that is caused by the toxic ego. And you know it's caused by the toxic ego because we have one person who's the head of a department who is not communicating with everybody else. And you need to communicate in order for things to flow the way they should. Everybody should be on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
And so this person has not communicated a lot of information. So there's a lot of misinformation being given. And I work at a university, and so now it turns out that the student has received information that's not correct.
Mm-hmm.
And now they want to blame me because I'm the one that's giving the information and a couple of other people. And the person in charge, my boss, is hysterical. And I tell her there's nothing to be hysterical about. This person gave us some information but did not give us all of the information. So therefore, you know, we're responding publicly. And it's not let's fire everybody. Let's teach this person how to communicate with the people that, you know, that are our responsibility. And so now my boss thinks she's going to get fired. I think I'm going to get fired. The difference between her and I is that I'm not hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
She told me Saturday, I haven't slept for days, and I don't know what to do about this. We have to solve this. I said, no, we don't have to solve this.
You saw. Yeah. I'm sure she's not sleeping.
She's not sleeping. She's hysterical. And she's an expert on the brain. And I told her, I said, sleep deprivation is making you respond in an unhealthy way. You have to go home and get some sleep.
I can't sleep.
Well, you have to make an effort to go to sleep. If you want, I can teach you a few exercises that you can go right to sleep.
No, I don't need, and she goes off into a tangent.
And so I look at her and I want to laugh because she's just like a little child having an unfortunate death tantrum. But I can't do anything about it. And everybody gets mad at me because I'm calm. You should be worried. About what?
Well, you could lose your job.
Yeah, and? Yeah, you know how many times I've been fired from that same job and I'm still there? Really? One time I was working full time and that other boss got mad at me too because, you know, I'm very calm about everything. They're all, you know, hysterical and let's get it done this way. And I say, okay, I'll do it. And they're trying to give me instructions on how to do it. And I said, okay, I know what to do. I know exactly what to do. Well, repeat it back to me. And so I repeat it back to them. And they're, no, it's not that way. And then they go off into something else. And so she was dying to fire me because I just don't get upset.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was just thinking that the difference between this other person that you work with that is in the same
situation.
No, in the same kind of, ¿cómo se dice? La misma rama del trabajo.
Same field.
Mm-hmm. They all work
with the
brain. You know,
right.
They teach how to help people, you know, with this kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
But at the right at the moment where they need to use their knowledge, They don't. They can. Why? Because they have learned from the theory.
Right.
You learn from the experience, and after that, you took the theory.
Well, the thing is that I practice. I practice what I teach.
Yes.
I don't say something and mean something else. And a lot of people in the field, in all fields. You know, we all know that we should be kind to each other and we should be doing this and we should be taking care of ourselves and blah, blah, blah. But none of us do it. And I see it all the time, especially in religion. I have people that will yell at me and scold me and tell me about morals and all kinds of things, but they themselves are doing horrible things.
Yes.
You know how many priests I've had as clients who have sexual addictions?
Mm-hmm.
I had a priest who was HIV positive because he was prowling around for young boys. You know, so they don't practice what they preach. And you have to be able to, if you're going to help somebody, you have to be able to know how to help yourself.
It's a game. For most of us, what we learn is something like, you know, go to an exam, get the punctuation, and that's it. I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot. Yes. You know, I was in a plane a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
and we entered the plane. It was a short, it was like 2 hours and a half trip,
mm-hmm.
and duration. And we entered the plane, the seat, and right away, almost the plane was taking off,
mm-hmm.
they started to serve food,
mm-hmm.
and I thought this is too fast. You know, we are not even in the right high to,
right.
You know, it's okay. You know, I don't mind. They know how they do.
Right.
And we start to eat, and they took the plates, everything out from us like
real
that.
Quick.
And it was because they knew it. They went right to a tormenta.
In a storm.
To a storm. We were entering to a storm. So they knew it, not us. So they tried to do everything fast to avoid,
yeah.
you know, things claiming. Okay, they announced, please.
Fasten
yes, and everybody was okay. It was really a storm. You know, I felt the plane falling.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was like when you are in a hole, you enter in a hole and the plane goes, everybody was screaming, everybody was, that was incredible. So they, at the moment, everything was calm, and the pilot or the girl, the stewardess, tell everybody, it's okay now, you can, you know,
unfasten your
belt and everything. And so the line to go to the restaurant, you cannot imagine what the whole plane waiting to go. All the people with the problem in the stomach, incredible. And the stewardess take a microphone and tell everybody, please go to your seats. We are going to enter again
into another storm.
So people they needed to go to the restroom, so nobody said. And the girl, she was so nervous. I don't know what this her first trip flyer, or maybe she never went in this situation. You know that, not. Oh my God, she started to scream at the microphone. Woman that she was supposed to get calm and you know try to calm everybody. She was freaking. She was crying and screaming and I told myself, nobody knows everything. Yeah, you can be prepared theoretically, to something, but in reality, you have to be prepared for your reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Reality, nobody. I mean, military people are prepared because they do things, risky things every day in their training.
And what they do.
But not us.
Right.
Not us.
Yeah. The thing is, you know, we have a toxic ego. And that toxic ego is never going to go away. You can put it away for a while.
Mm.
The whole purpose of your ego is to survive.
Mm.
See? So you can eventually bring your toxic ego back into making it a healthy ego, where it's not going to constantly be trying to save you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what the toxic ego does. The ego, the healthy ego, will, you know, is alert for any kind of danger. But the toxic ego sees everything as dangerous.
Yes.
See? And that's where the problem comes in, where everything is danger, so therefore you're constantly on alert, constantly. And everything is a problem. Everything is an issue. And we create, you know what they say, oh, what tangled web we weave? Well, there's a thing that says, oh, what tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. And when we deceive ourselves,
mm-hmm.
when we lie to ourselves, and we're not living in the present, we're not living in reality, everything becomes tangled. See? So now my boss is thinking that her boss is going to fire her, and how is she going to explain this to her boss? And if she says this, and the other one is going to deny it, and now I'm mad at that one. And she had a very good friend, very, very good friend, a very good ally. So now they're not friends anymore. See, my friendship with so-and-so now is really broken. Because she's too hysterical. She jumps to conclusions. You can't jump to conclusions. You can't start shooting out emails and telling people they're liars and they're this and they're that and without having all the facts. See? And when I talked to her yesterday and I told her what I had to say, she said, oh, my God. Well, I didn't know that, and I've already practically told this woman that she's a liar and whatnot, and I'm saying, well, you shouldn't have jumped the gun. I didn't tell her, you know, that she shouldn't have done it, But I said, I went, ooh, like, you know, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't have done that.
Yes.
And she got it. She says, well, now I really can't sleep and blah, and all that. And I'm going like, well, you know, you create your own house.
Mm-hmm.
We do that to ourselves. Nobody does that to us.
Yes.
You know, so we have to make sure that we have to stay in the present. You know, I wake up every morning in the middle of the night. I've always done that. And that's part of my PTSD. And I wake up and my heart is pounding and I know my blood pressure must be way up and all that. And then I bring myself down in seconds. You know, I look around, I'm safe. Okay, so I'm safe. There's nothing to be afraid of. Nobody's in here. I'm by myself. My doggy's right here next to me. He'll protect me if anything. My pillows are all over the floor. Now it's time to go back to sleep. And right now, I'm breathing. All right, now I'm inhaling inward, and now I'm exhaling, and now I'm inhaling, and now I'm exhaling, and now I'm inhaling, and now I'm exhaling. And I say that for maybe 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing I know, it's 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm waking up again. And I get up, I go to the bathroom, I come back, go back to sleep, and guess what I say to myself?
I'm inhaling.
Right now I'm inhaling. Right now I'm exhaling. Right now I'm sound asleep. See? And there were times when I would spend the whole night just worrying and thinking, and I don't do that anymore.
Hmm.
And you don't have to do that anymore. All that depression comes from the lack of sleep. How many people aren't insomniac and they take pills and pills make it worse because you don't get that REM sleep that you really need when you're taking pills. You need REM several times a night, a lot of times a night, in order to get a good night's sleep. That's when you dream. We don't even realize we dream half the time. But I have people say, I never dream. Well, yeah, you do. Because if you didn't, you'd be in an insane asylum. You'd be in an institution. Because you have to have that REM sleep, otherwise you go crazy. That's sleep deprivation. And a lot of us are sleep deprived. Because simply we have so much crap in our heads, we're constantly thinking about all the problems and all the things that we should do and what I'm going to do now. And if I don't give this one a gift, then she's going to get upset because I gave the other one a gift. And now I have to spend $100 on this one, so now I have to spend $100 on the other one, and I don't have that kind of money, and blah. And before you know it, you're going crazy. See? And I got to buy this for my kids. And we have spoiled our children to death. Literally. We give them everything. So now my kids must want. They want an Xbox. Well, you know what? Go buy an Xbox. You want an Xbox? Earn it. My kids all know. They wanted something. They have to go earn it. My son started working when he was 14 years old in Passaic, New Jersey, and at the Herald.
Mm-hmm.
In New Jersey, they have a Herald, Passaic Herald. And he started working there selling newspapers. And he would go with a crew, and he was first and second. He was in competition with another kid. And they both went to Cancun. They would both get television. Oh, you know, my kids would be bringing home, he would be bringing home a TV set. And I would say, where'd you get that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, where'd you steal that?
Mm-hmm.
And no, I won it. Nah, he'd bring the boom boxes. You know, he's in his 40s now. So in those days, they had boom boxes. And he would get all kinds of gifts. And he would come on in the newspaper that and the other day, Carol, as best salesman or something like that. And so it was him and this other guy. And they would take turns being number one and number two and number one and number two. And so and one day my son said to me, I want a pair of sneakers. I think they were Michael Jordan or something, Nike or something. And they were $90. And we couldn't afford $90 for a pair of sneakers. It was crazy. You know how much food we can buy for $90 and we don't have that? And so my husband used to make like $6 an hour. In those days, that was a lot of money, but still it was, you know, nice middle class, but not for $90 a sneaker.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody had them in the building, but everybody was working in a factory, like my husband. And so my husband said, come, I'll take you to buy sneakers. So he took him to the warehouse where there were $5 a pair. And he said, here, these are nice and these are nice. You're going to buy 2 pairs of sneakers. He said, no. And so he went and he bought it. He went to the Herald and he got himself a job. And from then on, anything he wanted, he bought all his clothes. And he bought everything exactly what he wanted. All of his money went to buying clothes for him. And he was happy. And today he's a very responsible adult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't depend on me or anybody else. He's an agent, a special agent in the Army. You know, and he's happy and he's doing exactly what he wants to do. And, you know, all of my kids, even my son has brain damage. He knows that he has to, he goes as far as he can. And he tries to go even further. And he realizes that the further he goes, the further he can go. Because there are times when I just say, no. Mom, I need, well, not my problem. I ain't got no money. And it's not that I don't have it. It's that he has to earn, because if not, he's a bottomless pit. Believe me, I would be giving and giving and giving and giving, and no bills would be paid, no, you know, because he doesn't understand. And I say to him, well, there's no money. And when he gets upset about it, I tell him, get a job. He can't get a job, I know that, but, you know, I tell him that anyway. And he goes out there and does little odd jobs here and there, and he can't really work because, I mean, he'll start working in an hour, he'll get tired and go home. You know, and he understands he's not going to get paid for the rest of the day, but he wants to get paid for that hour that he works. And so it doesn't work that way. Yeah, he doesn't understand that. So the whole point is that our toxic ego will destroy us. And not because it wants to destroy us, not because it's evil, but because it thinks it's doing what's in our best interest. And in reality, it's not. We can't, you know, it's like a bear. A bear wants to play. He's not ripping your head off because he's a mean, terrible, evil animal. He's ripping your head off because he thinks he's playing. I have a cat. She weighs like maybe 16, 17 pounds. She's gorgeous. She's beautiful. And she's big. And her nails are sharpened to the teeth. She scratches you, you're going to bleed. Trust me, you're going to bleed. You know, the other animals in the house, the other cat and my dog like her around because she wants to play. But she plays rough,
yeah.
See? And so the other day I was sleeping and she jumped on my bed and I must have moved and my leg was out. And she scratched my leg. And she was playing. And I know she was playing because that's what she does. But she scratched my leg. And it still hurts. This was like a week ago and it still hurts. So, you know, that's what the toxic ego does. The toxic ego wants to help. But it's like a bull in a china shop. You know what that is?
No.
You know what a china shop is?
China shops? No.
Yeah. It's like a store with all kinds of delicate china.
Yes.
And so a bull runs through there, and you know it's going to break everything.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's how the toxic ego is. It's, you know, it's like Baby Huey. Have you seen that Baby Huey? It's a cartoon. It's a little baby, but he's huge.
Oh.
He's very, very big. And you think that he's maybe 10 years old when he's really only maybe 2.
Okay. Yeah.
Because he's huge. So that's what the toxic ego does. And the toxic ego really doesn't mean to hurt. It means to help. The purpose of the toxic ego is to help you and save you, except that it's trying to save you when you don't need saving. And the toxic ego wants to help everybody. See, if I help you, you'll like me.
Uh-huh.
See, so I have to always be helping you. I have to do things for you. It's easier for me to do it for you than for me to show you how to. See,
yes.
I have the issue where I'm going to teach you how to do it. And I'm going to teach you until you learn. But But if you get stupid on me and you lay back and you don't want to do it, you know, I'm gone. Mm-hmm. Not other people. Most people, the codependent people, they will do it and do it and do it and do it and do it for you and then complain that they're doing things for you. Mm-hmm. See? You remember when you had the house guest?
Yes.
Right? You kept doing for them and doing for them, but you were complaining that they were taking advantage of you.
Yeah.
Because the more you did, the more they wanted you to do.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. Their toxic ego was saying, oh, you're going to do this for me? Okay. And they lay back and let you do it. But it becomes too much. See?
Mm-hmm.
That's why in an addiction relationship, one is the doormat and the other one walks all over the doormat. And then the doormat complains, he's walking all over me. Yeah, well, get up off the floor and stop becoming a rug. but we don't see that. And what we see is that we're being taken advantage of. If you're being taken advantage of, it's because you're letting someone take advantage of you. That's not because they're bad people. It's because you allow them to do it to you. And if you allow me to slap you, I'm going to slap you, especially if I enjoy slapping. See? So, you know, when you have two toxic egos playing the same little game, okay, I'll let you slap me, but then you have to let me do whatever it is, you know, that I want you to do. And it's a game. It's a game. I'll yell at you. If you can slap me, but then you have to let me yell at you.
Yeah.
See?
Yes.
Or you have to let me steal from you. Or you let me have to let me whatever. Look at in dysfunctional relationships. Children that blackmail the parents. I had a friend, her daughter one day said, I'm gonna call the police on you, because she was telling her, you have to do your homework and you're not going to do anything else until you do your homework. And she said, I'm going to call the police on you for abuse, for emotional abuse. And my friend said to her, oh, really? And she went after her with a shoe. And she beat the crap out of her. And she said, not call the police for child abuse. Go ahead, call the police. Here, and she gave her the phone. The little kid said, oh, well, okay, never mind. See? Because the kids want to blackmail us. Now all of a sudden we're the bad guy. We can't teach our children anything because if we do, you know, it's abuse.
Yeah.
It's emotional abuse. It's child abuse. See? I taught my daughter, I said, listen, you don't have to hit, you don't have to yell. Give them choices. Oh, you want to use the Xbox? Really? You get up in the morning, because he used to play Xbox all night. And then in the morning, he couldn't get up to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd go to school sleep deprived. And he'd be tired, and he'd be grouchy. And then he'd come home from school, up to fall asleep, get up around 9, 10 o'clock, eat, and be on the Xbox all night. So she said to him one day, she says, time to go take a bath. And, well, I'm not tired. Well, that's not my problem. You have to go take a bath and go to bed. And he said, no, I'm not tired. I'll go to bed in a little while. Blah, blah, blah. She said, look, here's the deal. You can stay on the Xbox all you want. You can stay on the Xbox all night and then go to school. When you come home from school, you're going to sit down and do homework before you do the Xbox. If you don't get up in the morning, if you give me a hard time in the morning to get up, and you don't get up and go to the bathroom and take a bath or do whatever it is you do in the bathroom and be ready to go to school on time, you don't get an Xbox. So you decide, you want to come home from school today, do your homework and then play your Xbox, or do you want to come home from school today, do your homework and go to bed? That's it. And the next morning, he was up before her.
Mm-hmm.
He was taking a bath when she got up. See? And she's had no more problems with him since. Because she knows. He knows. You're not going to get your Xbox, and you're not going to get your TV, and you're not going to get... He's got everything, everything the kid wants. And then she pulls out the boxes, the empty boxes, and she says, okay, and shows them. You have a choice. And when I take the Xbox away from you, I'm not taking it away from you. You're going to put it in the box, and I'm going to put the box away. And I'm going to take the box to Grandma's house. That's me.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that if it comes to my house, he's never going to get it. See? Never going to get it back. So now he's behaving. You don't have to hit your kids or scream at your kids. She used to spend her time screaming at him all the time. No more screaming. Oh, you don't want to do this? Fine. And she'll go up to something that he wants, put it in the box. Okay, this is going to Grandma's house. Okay, Mom, okay, Mom, okay. And very rarely does she have a problem with it. See?
That's the boundaries.
Boundaries. I don't know what happened to our society. We've forgotten all about boundaries. We want to give our kids everything we didn't have. Well, you know what? You're better off not having all those things. I don't give any kid anything like that. I gave my granddaughter once a computer because she was going to school and she needed it for homework and stuff. And her father, being a special agent, blocked everything. You know, so I felt comfortable giving her that. And her brother, who was little, I gave him a bike. Go out there and get some exercise. See? And they live in an area where, at that time, they lived at cul-de-sac.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there were other parents out there all the time watching their kids playing and whatnot. So the kid with the bike, he was fine. As long as they didn't need a cul-de-sac, he was fine with the bicycle. Run up and down with the bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
The other little kids would have their little bike, and they'd be running up and down with their little bikes and stuff, and they were safe. So, but other than that, I went to Hawaii now, and I'm going to see them. I'll give them money. I'll give them both a few dollars and let them go out there and buy whatever they need.
Yeah.
That's what kids want. They want the money because the more money they get, the more they can go buy their own little games and little stuff that whatever they need. The point is that your toxic ego will take you down. Your toxic ego will destroy you. Because if you don't let go of your old ideas and ideas that are self-destructive, the toxic ego never lets go of things that don't work anymore, ideas that don't work anymore. You know, you go out and you tip somebody. Nowadays, you can't tip somebody $1 or $2. You give them $5, $4. You know, they look at you like you're crazy. You know, and I know people who go out and give a tip, 25 cents. I said, well, I have 25 cents. You don't get 25 cents. I mean, we have to give at least, minimum, $1. You know, and they're going to look at you like you're crazy as it is. You know, but if you're going to want to be cheap about it, okay, give them $1. But we live in a society where we think that by looking at someone else and judging everybody, when you're judging somebody, you're really judging yourself. When you look at somebody that you don't like, that's your mirror. You know what that means?
Mm-hmm.
That's your mirror. You're looking at something about yourself that you don't like. And you don't realize that when you're judging another person, you're really judging yourself. See? Look around. Look at the people that are complaining about other people and ask yourself, but that person is just like the person they're talking about.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
My ex-husband talks about people that lie. Oh, that person's a liar. Oh, that person's not honest. That person is dishonest. That person is a hypocrite. That person... And I said to him, you're a compulsive liar. That's what you do. Look at you. That's you're looking at your mirror. The person you hate the most looks just like you. is doing the same things that you do. The minute you say, oh my God, I'm just like that person, you stop hating that person. And a lot of times people say to me, man, I don't like that person. I don't know why I don't like them, but I just don't like them. And I say to them, okay, look at that person. Observe that person. What exactly is it that you see that you don't like? And they sometimes have a hard time doing it, but they eventually figure it out. And they say, that person is a hypocrite. That's why they're not honest. And I say, okay, well, you're looking at the mirror. So what do you see? And they say to me, oh, my God, that me? Because then they can see themselves. And it happens every time. If you don't like somebody, if you look at somebody and you just say, I can't stand that person, and you don't know why you can't stand them, just observe. Observe their mannerisms. Observe the way they talk. Observe what they say. And it'll click, and you're going to suddenly say, that's it. See?
Yeah.
They're a show-off. They're hypocrites. They're liars. They're whatever. And you're going to find that that's you. Have you ever, that ever happened to you?
No, not really. It doesn't happen to me to not like someone like that.
But it's not a hate.
No, I understand, but I usually don't, you know, I accept everybody.
You accept everybody the way
they are. Maybe, you know, at school when I was little, something happened or I got this feeling, but, you know, it's so far away that I cannot remember. But, no.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Yeah, I think this is a way that I don't have to carry.
We don't have to carry that way. Yeah. You know, when we stay in the present, we don't have to dislike anybody. Everybody is the way they are.
Sometimes, you know, I know a new person, and the other day I knew someone that when this guy spoke to me, he didn't look at my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like that. I like to confront mm-hmm. people the amiga, right?
Yeah, you want eye contact.
Yes. But this is not for me. This is not
that's a cultural thing.
Yeah, but whatever it is, mm-hmm. I'm not changing my opinion about this person that I don't have any opinion because I just knew this person.
Just met him.
I just met him. And I need to wait. I need to do whatever I need to do with this person, to talk more, to work, whatever, to really know this person,
yeah.
Of course. By my experience, I have something to be alert with. Why this guy is not looking at my eyes
mm-hmm.
when I speak to him. But I don't judge right away because I cannot tell he's I'm a hypocrite or whatever.
Does it make you uncomfortable?
No. I have been more uncomfortable with other people in other experiences.
Because That's my point. When somebody makes you uncomfortable, say, that's when you have to ask yourself, why am I uncomfortable with this person?
Yeah, okay.
See? So
no, it's not uncomfortable.
No. Yeah, and that's the whole thing. When you feel uncomfortable around somebody, it doesn't have to be a big, tremendous thing. It's just like an uneasiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually because there's something about that person that you don't like that's just like you. And we don't want to see our defects. See, that's the whole thing.
I had an experience once, several years ago, I was married
mm-hmm.
to a guy that had been in psychotherapy for years. So I had this relationship with him. And in working, I knew, of course, all the people, and I got a start working with a percussion player,
mm-hmm.
and his wife was a psychotherapist.
Mm-hmm.
So we start to have a relationship, me with them, and once we got together in a party,
mm-hmm.
and my husband knew she was a psychotherapist.
Mm-hmm.
So I introduced them, and they start to talk, and he wanted to go. He wanted to leave the
mm-hmm.
the party, and I asked him, why? Because she thinks she knows. Because he didn't like her.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, but why? What she did that you didn't like it? I don't know. She has this kind of look at you like she knows everything about you. And I knew she didn't want it to be discovered. She was a liar also. And she was someone that started to talk about... And, you know, all the kind of things, and he doesn't know anything about it. His thing
her
is,
husband.
My husband.
Oh, your husband.
He started to talk about everything, not knowing what he was talking about.
Right.
He needed to talk and to put himself in a center, you know, of the conversation. And with her, he couldn't do that. But he knew she was...
She would see through him.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and that's what happens. You know, we're afraid. A lot of people have issues with me because I don't get upset about things. I mean, it really takes a lot for me to get upset. And so I don't get upset. And like I was saying before, I've gotten fired from jobs because I don't get upset about things. And they're uncomfortable with me around. See, I got fired from the university once. I had a full-time job there and everything, and the person, my boss, was not happy with me because I don't get upset about anything. She was constantly looking for a fight. Yeah. She did it with everybody. She would nitpick and bitch and complain and whine, and I would go, okay, and okay, and okay, and okay. And she did not know how to handle me. So she fired me.
She couldn't manipulate you.
She couldn't manipulate me. That's
because
right.
When you get in a fight with someone, so if
you're correct.
Correct, and the other person say, I'm correct,
mm-hmm.
but the boss always has, you know, he's
yeah.
correct. So
I
avoid you have to say, it's okay, you are correct.
I always said she was right.
Always.
And so she wanted a fight. She wanted an argument.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't give it to her. And so the person that was going to stay in my position was a part-timer. But she said, if you go, I'm going. I'm not staying here. Not with this crazy lady, because she really was not well. And so when the other person left, there was nobody in the department. So I applied. I didn't apply to my boss. I applied to the main campus, to human resources. And they had no choice but to hire me back as a part-time because there was nobody else. And I was the only one really qualified. They couldn't take anybody off the street who didn't know they had train and whatnot. I knew everything there was to know about the business, about the job, about the position. So, I mean, it would have been discrimination. They knew that if they didn't hire me, I could get a lawyer. And so they hired me. And then, and still after that, she kept, you know, threatening to fire me. And so finally she retired. And, you know, the new dean, she's wonderful. She really is. She's a really nice lady. And she's very fair. And but, you know, she's a little nervous about things. And so the thing is that... When you're in the present, you have to be prepared to understand that the world doesn't revolve around you. See, I stay calm knowing that a lot of people are going to be upset with me or they're going to totally ignore me. And I'm not the kind of person that needs the glory. I really don't. I don't care. You know, I'm in there. I'm doing what I have to do. And if I get, you know, I'm recognized, fine. And if I don't get recognized, that's fine too. And everybody knows it. So a lot of people will jump in when they should be saying, I should get the credit for something. They take the credit for it. Like, I don't say anything. I don't care. It's not important for me to get accolades. It doesn't matter. What matters is that I know that I'm doing what is best for me. It doesn't have to be best for you, but I'm not doing anything that's going to harm you. See? I have to do what is best for me without harming anybody else. And so if I benefit from something, everybody benefits. Because that's how humanity works. We're all linked together. If you hurt somebody, the universe gets hurt. Humanity gets hurt. Because we're all linked. And I was looking at some ancient, on television, it's a program called Ancient Something or Other. And it talks about how we're linked, how different countries are linked by their drawings and their, you know, and how is it possible that somebody in China draws the same objects and things as somebody in Peru. Mm-hmm. So how did that happen? And it's very interesting, but it's helping me to understand that we're linked somehow together. And, you know, that universal consciousness is there. And how it works, I don't know. I don't know how it works. And it really doesn't matter. I don't have to know. What I do have to know is that I have to be careful not to hurt anybody. And I have to be careful not to be involved in the destruction of anybody or anything.
Yes.
See? So we're almost finished, are we? Oh, no, we still have a few minutes.
Let me remind everybody that the letting go of resistance, the inner work journey, the new book in English, Dr. Nidia, is already in the stores, online stores, digital stores, so you can buy the download or you can buy the book itself. Dr. Nidia also has in the stores two meditations, one in English, one in Spanish, for the sleep and relaxation. Very, very good and helpful. And she has also a book in Spanish. If you know, have friends that need some help and tools getting a better life. I'm going to put the link in the chat. The name is El Poder de Tu Esencia, Conociendo Tu Yo Interno. It's at Amazon.com and all our online stores. So thank you very much for being with us. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next Sunday.
Oh, next Sunday I won't be here. I'm going to Hawaii for 3 weeks.
So maybe we communicate by phone, by online, and we do the...
Next week I'll be traveling.
Okay.
So I probably won't be on the phone.
So we do the...
I'm not sure because of the time frame thing. But if I can get on the phone, I'll call. But the week after that, maybe we can do something about linking up and calling from Hawaii. If I can call from Hawaii, I will.
That would be nice. So you can tell us what is happening there.
Yes. Saturday I'll be going to a wedding, my nephew's daughter's wedding.
Okay. So have a great Sunday, and I'll see. I'll be here. No, because I don't see you. But I'll be here next Sunday. Thank you very much, and bye.
Bye. Have a wonderful weekend, and until we meet again.
believe.